Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Jay Bird Watching Podcast, the official podcast of jaysjournal.com and fansided.com, where we discuss all things Toronto Blue Jays baseball. We'll talk about news, rumors, and game recaps. So whether you're a diehard fan or just getting started with the team, this is the podcast for you. Here's your host, Craig Borden, with co-hosts Jason Lyons and me, Ken Alfred. You're listening to the Jay Bird Watching Podcast.
Good evening, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another lovely evening of, I'm just going to say it like our show title says, another evening of bad medicine as for Toronto Blue Jays fans. And to that point, Jason, are you ready to shake it up?
I am. It's another beautiful Thursday. It's another 50-50 from the Jays for the last week and a bit. A couple of bright spots, not only from players, but from some of the games. I was able to watch a little bit of some of the games. Overall, I think the title's pretty accurate. I mean, the flu ripped through them, and then so did the Orioles and the Twins. I feel like it is what it is, and we've kind of landed on this bad spot. But I'm not going to let the negative vibes of the Jays ruin the Canucks' chances tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. City's alive. It's down to a 3-game series, and you don't get playoff hockey as much as you should in Canadian cities. And I feel like, you know, at this point, I'm kind of reserved the fact I've always been a Canucks fan. I have my whole life. And to be honest with you, this is the first time that win, lose, or draw in this series, I feel like the underachievement that they had been expected to do this year, that I think we're all pretty happy with where things have landed. And remember, if you're at home tonight, cheer for Elias Pettersson. He can hear you. He needs it. There, that's all I'm going to say.
There it is. As you're taking us full around the horn here, because the other fun part about this thing is we wanted to start doing, you and I, some Major League Baseball news in general. And I, unfortunately, I'm going to focus a little bit on the American League East here a little bit, because the Blue Jays have been playing the Interligo in the interdivision part the last few days. I don't know who did what or what Wheaties that the New York Yankees have unfortunately been chewing on, my friend, but the New York Yankees look like the New York Yankees over the last week, and that's getting fearsome.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. We kind of hit not only the Jays, but the whole American League East. It's almost like they just took a pause to let the rest of the American League catch up or pass them, or at least not stand out so badly when people look at the standings. They're like, oh. You know, like the next division leader wouldn't even be in eighth place in the American League East, and there's only seven teams. Yes. You know, it's one of those things where the Yankees have been building to this. They've been building, you know, to a team like this, and I think they're finally there. The young studs are really studs. Aaron Judge is playing great. Juan Carlos Stanton is back to being Juan Carlos Stanton, which he hasn't been for what, 3 years or so. So, I mean, it sucks, but I mean, you're going to go into the teeth of the lion at some point, and whether it's the Orioles, whether it's the Yankees, whether it's the Braves, who's better, the Dodgers or the Yankees right now? I mean, Ohtani's hitting every single thing he can possibly hit 4 million miles. Like the ball he hit at in San Francisco the other night, didn't they say it was the deepest ball ever hit in that ballpark? Like it went out.
I believe that was correct.
dead center field, almost made it into McCovey Cove at dead center. And if you have ever been there, if you've ever been to San Francisco, that is a country mile. Like, that is pushing towards one of the biggest home runs I've ever witnessed in my life. And it's amazing to watch the Braves and the Yankees and the Dodgers just dominate right now. Like, I mean, they're almost untouchable. And, you know, it sucks that the twice I've used that one, but it sucks that the Jays, you know, with the talent they haven't been able to put it together. But I mean, I don't think you can rely on the likes of, you know, Kevin Kiermaier and George Springer and Vogelbach and a few of these other guys to get you over the hump, where these other teams aren't mortgaging their future. They're relying on their future. Like, the Dodgers have always relied on their farm team because they have so many big dollar players. They can't go out and acquire more. So they have to have the guys. Staff. Yeah. And they have to have a Gavin Lux. They have to have they have to keep a guy like Will Smith and turn him into the best catcher in the league. Like, I mean,
Joe Offerman, who's like the young rookie that looks good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a recipe for success. The Jays will figure it out. We've been close, and I'm not selling these Jays out at this point. I mean, you know, there's still, what are they, one game under 500? You know, it is what it is. And you can catch fire for 3 weeks and totally change your fortune. But like
four games under 500.
like we talked about last week, and I think we have for a couple of weeks now, something needs to change. And I don't know how many times the media can say this, and we can say this, and the other podcasts, even though they suck, they can say it. You know, something has to change. And until that time, until management or John Schneider realizes that something major has to change, i.e. bringing somebody up, i.e. you know, anchoring Bo Bichette or Vladdy or somebody to the bench for a couple of games and let somebody have a chance. I mean, we can't say Bo Bichette anymore because what, get 400 for the week?
He had a hell of a week. And to that point, we're going to get to that piece. You brought up an interesting point on what the catalyst is. And there's an odd 35th anniversary in Blue Jays history that was yesterday. Do you happen to know what the 35-year-old trivia question might be? Okay, Famous event in Toronto Blue Jays history 35 years ago, yesterday.
35 ago yesterday. Well, it's not even that far into the season. So, geez, Louise.
This is a fun one because this became the foundation of a team that went really good for a long time.
Was this the trade for for Joe Carter?
Negative. That was off season. But think you're not off, but not player related.
Oh, Cito Gaston?
You are 100% correct. Yesterday was the 35th anniversary of the Blue Jays letting go of Jimmy Williams, who was taking a good team nowhere. And after a 12-24 start, Cito Gaston took over and led the Blue Jays to the playoff, almost to the playoffs in that year, with a 77-49 record.
I love Cito Gaston. Yeah, you're never gonna get me to say a bad word about Cito Gaston. I love everything about
the division title.
Yeah, yeah.
I was reading the rest of it. I was like, I thought they won the division. But it misled me in somebody's wording there. But yes, that happened.
Yep.
And I can't say the Blue Jays don't have the unequivalent of that right now with Don Mattingly sitting on the bench, but I just don't. I think this is a problem like we talked about last week. I think the Blue Jays' internal problems are bigger than John Schneider.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I mean, we've harped on this for a couple of weeks now. And, you know, I think that the writing was on the wall a little bit in the Twins series last year when everyone was pointing a finger in a different direction. And we decided to make one of the worst moves player structure wise that I've seen in a long, long time. There's been some bad ones. Let's not go too deep. There's been some awful moves, guys.
But just to point out there, it might have been like leaving Mitch Williams in a little too long in the ninth inning of game six.
Come on. We love old Mitchy. Mitchy.
We love Mitch Williams.
Philadelphia fans don't love him. But I think this, you know, I don't know that at this point right now that you're going to see anything change above Schneider. I mean, you know, Mattingly may tell Mattingly to take a, you know, to take a break. I mean, it's interesting to think how well he was doing with the players in preseason. And then he shaves his beard and everything goes to rat. And, you know, it's one of those things where, and I make the beard cover, you know, comment in levity. But you know, it's one of those things where it seems like Schneider's lost the dugout a little bit and the vets don't seem to be steering the ship in a way that we want them to be. And, you know, it's Vlad, you know, it's hard. Vladdy can't step up. You know, he's just not mature enough. And Bo's not loud enough.
I think those two guys that I put it out on the field kind of type would be the other catch to that. So you're relying on the Kiermaiers, the Turners, the Springers to be that voice in the dugout. And honestly, this is where you and I talked out. I really wish that somebody like Joey Votto would get healthy and get on this team, because I think he might be the leader this team is missing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I think Justin Turner's done an excellent job. I mean, everything I've seen, you know, like I follow him on all of his socials and you know, I think that he has caused us a lot of great work, and he's brought that to Toronto, and he's still doing it back in LA. I feel like he's really, you know, sort of, you can always see him talking. He's always up on the top. He's not sitting at, you know, and I saw a cut to the dugout the other day.
He was sick. He was still there.
Yeah. And the amazing thing for me is the one of the only guys I saw sitting on his ass against the back wall was George Springer. Like, he's just not. He's not engaged. He's not the same Springer. He's not excited to be there anymore, even though, you know, that's all he talked about. I don't know if it's age. I don't know if it's lack of winning or what it is, but he's just as responsible for any of that stuff than anyone else is. And the only way.
We know he was the one that got hit the hardest with whatever this flu thing is they've been all dealing with over the last week. The game I was at on Saturday, and we'll get to that too, that he was sitting on the bench. I couldn't believe he came out and drew a walk.
Yeah.
So,
but sometimes when you need to dig deep like that, like when we were in the provincials a couple of years ago, that team right there up above me, we had one of our star players was deathly ill in a very important game. And when you play Little League, you actually have to play every kid. Like you can't take kids off your roster. And, you know, like it's so, you know, he had to do something. So he had to get two, unless we got enough runs, he had to have two defensive innings and one at the plate. And he went up there and he laid down the greatest bunt I've ever seen in my entire life and ran the ball out to one. Braden Lawson, that's for you. I know your dad is a devout subscriber to the cast. They're up in Kelowna at a baseball tournament this weekend.
There you go.
But Braden hustled down to one, beat out the throw to one. We pinch ran for him. And it started us getting on a roll to end the inning and end the game. And he sacked up like I don't know if I've ever seen. He was gray. He was just chucking in the corner of the dugout. Yeah, oh yeah, it's a sheet. And then goes in there and just flips a switch. And he's like, gotta get this done. You know, I got a job to do here. And so, you know, kudos to kids like that. And I mean that's where you're David Schneiders and you know, your Ernie Clements and your lunch pail guys, that's where we need a bunch of those guys to come in and, you know, show some of these guys what it's like to, you know, chew through a wall for your team.
Yeah. And on that note, we talked about getting contributors from, or getting key contributions from the right places. Over the last week, it was nice to see we had three gentlemen that actually batted in those five games above 500. And that is a resurgent Bo Bichette, a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that has been continuing the, I'll just say it, singles and coming up with key clutch hits in the right times. But and then IKF, Isaiah Kiafralefa, who has been quietly having a really damn good season for the Blue Jays.
And defensively, he's been good. You know, I also feel like, you know, like even watching the replays from the game last night, which we'll get to. I like the fact that Vladdy's playing with confidence right now. And, you know, they make a really nice play with Kikuchi and him to first base. But then that ball that's hit to the outfield that he's running for, George Springer can get there. And he's calling him off. IKF is yelling at him to back off. And he doesn't. He tries to make a ridiculous over-the-shoulder catch. And You know, it didn't prove it didn't prove costly, but it's still the point is make the easy plays. So,
right. And then that is a team play in that situation. Springer's coming in on the ball. It's not a, like you said, it doesn't need to be a web gem.
Right.
It just needs to be an out.
Web gem. That's a good one. Going back to the old web gems.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll bring out the screaming baseball for the home runs on baseball tonight here at the end of the show.
Yes.
I missed that. They don't do anything fun like that. But again, then again, on that fact, ESPN doesn't even understand baseball actually exists anymore. It's all football, American football.
It's true. It's true.
So to that point, we talked about what that catalyst is on that thing. And is regardless of the fact that it sounds like Aroldis Martinez's glove is not ready for the major leagues, if you're talking about things like that happening, there's still room for this team to improve, and maybe IKF's back keeps him in the lineup playing third base and you bring up Aroldis. Maybe it's this thing. Maybe Addison Barger can come up and play third base, whatever it is. But right now, if you look at where we've had the holes in the offense, like blatant holes, like we were talking about with right field with George Springer, defensively, obviously he's doing well. But when he's sick, our next plug-in has been Kevin Biggio. I can't say that's the best for a struggling offense already move. Thankfully, he's come up with a couple of key hits and walks, actually, the right occasion. But that hasn't been helping the team as a whole, right? You got second base. IKF, like I said, is doing pretty damn good at second base, but he can play a few other places. So maybe he moves somewhere else to fill in either second, third, or whatever. Thankfully, Bo Bichette's finally starting to look like Bo Bichette and hitting the ball hard. And like I said, he got 9 hits in 5 games since we had our last show. So that is very impressive. Bo Bichette's starting to look like Bo Bichette.
Let's not kid ourselves. Like, I mean, if you go and look at the Jays batting average or batting stats with all the splits, I mean, Vladdy's leading the team right now in batting average. And Bo is second. And Bo Bichette is having the worst season of his life. Like, I think really speaks. Bo isn't second. He's second in a few other things. But his average, he's it's amazing to me how poorly he can have played. I guess Danny Jansen's leading now that I
For qualified batters that have played enough innings right now, our best hitter is Vlad, to your point, with a .275 batting average. Justin Turner's number two with a .246. Bo Bichette is third with .227. And Varsho is fourth at .208. And George Springer at .201 as far as who qualifies for league leader stuff.
Right.
This shows how much in flux the rest of our lineup has been this season, Jason, there, that you only have quote unquote 5 batters eligible for the batting average race.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
Not that any of them are close, but
yeah, and I don't think it's, I feel like it's not a lack of good at bats. Like, I've watched a few, 10, 12, 13 pitch at bats. The problem is they're just not effectively doing what they need to do when there's runners in scoring position, like, or even runners not in scoring position. They're not trying to advance. They're not trying to go station to station. Oh, some of them are, but there's too many of them that are trying to hit a 6-run homer. And, it's one of those things where until you have a couple of giant offensive weeks, not games, not, they've had a couple of big games. They've had a 10 spot, a couple of big numbers they've put up. It can't be one and done. It has to be, 2 weeks of 6+ runs a game or even more. You can throw a different, a smaller one in there, a close game, pitcher's duel, whatever. But if it's not, and even if it is, when it gets to the latter innings, that's where you've got to step up and you've got to start flexing your muscles and smashing the ball around.
So, but as far as anything goes, like I said, I was kind of punching some holes at this to begin with here, but the Blue Jays are in the bottom 10 of all Major League Baseball in most offensive categories.
Including nose hair.
The only one that they're actually in the middle ground on is they are tied for 15th in all Major League Baseball with 66 doubles. All the rest of the categories, hits, runs scored, all of that, they're in the lower portions of Major League Baseball in. And as far as runs scored, we're right there for fighting for last place with the St. Louis Cardinals and the White Sox.
I mean, who would have, we knew, I mean, you and I talked about this a while ago, that the Cardinals were going, you know, trying to go yard sale. It's not a surprise that they're as bad as they are, but when you, and the White Sox, I mean, they're awful. But when you take a team like the Jays that have a lot of talent on them, you know, our middle relief is slaughtering us right now. They are just hanging the starters out to dry. They're making bad pitches. Like that pitch that Romano threw last night, that's a bad pitch. That's leaving a duck.
There's one category we're doing. We are in the top five in something.
Offensively?
We have the second fewest strikeouts in all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, because we would prefer to fly out to shallow left. You know, like it's or hit into a double play. Yeah. God, I don't even want to know what our double play numbers are, especially
I can find that one right now.
Woof, it's probably awful.
Nope,
but
nope, I can find it. I did find it. We are in, actually, I looked to the bottom. We are fourth place, so the fourth most in Major League Baseball with 38 ground and double plays. New York Yankees
go,
are leading the way with 40. The Yankees are leading the way with 46. Miami Marlins, San Diego Padres are the only teams ahead of us in as many grounds into double plays.
Sucks. So that's a third time, fourth time I've said that. I mean, it's, you know, it's not good right now. And, you know, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that, you know, bring on Tampa, bring on Chicago. I don't know about Detroit, but at least bring on those two. And, you know, let's at least try and string together a couple of wins. Like this is two big series. Like if they can get two from Tampa, they should be able to sweep the Chicago. They're terrible. So if you can get four wins in the next six games, that pops you up above 500. If anybody else struggles in the division through those days, then you're back up and in, and at least you're hunting. Like what are they, five games out of the wild card? I mean, you know, it's
Well, like I said, regardless of all this gloom and doom that we were talking about here, that is like literally just ground in, you know, statistics. They're only 4.5 games out of the wild card. Right. I mean, 4.5 games out of the division, and they're 4.5 games out of the last wild card spot. Who was is actually being currently held by a team that we somehow managed to come back and win at the game I was at on Saturday, the Minnesota Twins. So right now, I just think it's crazy that when you're looking at the MLB power rankings, the Baltimore Orioles have since the existence of the power rankings system, is the first time they are the best team in baseball on the power rankings list.
Well, I mean, I think we have to address this. Like the game that the Jays beat the Orioles, that was the Jays. That was the Jays at almost full clip. That was them. Their defense was unbelievable. Pitching was great. Hit the ball pretty well. I mean, they probably could have won that.
The first game that we won in that series, Jason, the team literally, John Schneider came out after the game and said, these guys were the ones that were healthy. I told them they're going to play all day, every day on this game, and there's going to be no pinch hitting, no pinch running, no nothing. And they won. I mean, that's saying a lot, that with our not normal only guys that could play, our starting nine guys plus pitchers, managed to beat the best team in baseball in an extra inning game that was very tight. And to that point, Jordan Romano pitched a lot of pitches that night to get that win. So I'm not shocked the following night with a guy that missed a lot of spring training, came into the season injured, all these things, that a great hitter like Adley Rutschman went postal on the thing and took it out of the ballpark on Utah Street.
That was crushed, dude.
That was not a little small home run. It could have been a worse pitch. I'm not saying it was a great pitch, but it was definitely not a goose egg for him to just tee up.
And you know, tee that thing up. Also, let's not lose in this how well Alex Manoa pitched.
That's where one of the many things I want to get to over the past week. So, like I said, I want to go back, flashback Friday a little bit here. Blue Jays lost the first game of the Minnesota Twins series 2-3. It was a really close game. They were in with a team that has been red effing hot. The Minnesota Twins might be the hottest team in baseball, but they were also one of the worst teams in baseball for a bit there. So they're only 23-15 at that win.
They go from Philly to Minnesota.
Down to the last inning. Yeah. Joe Ryan pitched a great game for the Twinkies. For us, Kikuchi was still looking like one of the best finds in baseball for what we're doing for and getting from him out of these deal, the deal that he's on. The catch was, like I said, they scored a couple, you know, that late inning run that they scored in the ninth was just enough for the Twins to edge that out because the Blue Jays ended up scoring a run in the ninth inning that day. And it just didn't quite make it, you know?
Yep.
And that was an IKF night. He went 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs that night. And a run scored because he had the home run.
Yep. And you know, it's that's a hard fought game that you're okay. You're okay to lose that when you're 7 games above 500. It's when you're 3 below, you know, and you take that when you're like, damn it. Like, I mean, we just took one of the best teams in the majors right now, right to the hilt.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you can take some positives from it, but that's just a, you know, especially after, you know, getting lambasted in, you know, Philly and in Washington for the most part. You know, it's hard.
So then I actually happened to be in attendance for the game on Saturday, and wow, did that start out wonderfully. I barely had a beer in me and we're already down fucking 3-0 in the first inning. And by the, you know, second inning, we're losing 4-1. Then it was, you know, at one point 7-1 for this game. And the Blue Jays, for all the downers and everything, I think they showed their true colors during that game. You know, we were talking about the players only meeting and all these things last week. What is the catalyst? That a win like that might have actually been the thing to flip the script, saying, you know what, we are that good to hang out with teams like the Twins. And look at this, we were down 7-1. And we turn this script around to the point where we win that ball game, which started off with 3 runs in the first, an error, and the guy that ended up being the one that literally helped us dig the hole with a miscue in left field with Davis Schneider. He was the one that turned that game around for the Blue Jays, too. Like I said, you miss a ball like that in the first inning, it really lets Kevin Gausman get buried.
Yep. That's big for him, though, too.
Correct, but he made an incredible play that threw out a run before he hits that home run when he came off as the leadoff batter the next inning and literally puts the Blue Jays on his back and says, you know what, I did fuck up earlier. Guess what? We're not done yet. I hear no fat lady. There's no end of this game. So we end up
I love his resolve.
Chipping away at it.
Yeah, I love his resolve, and I love for the kids that are out there watching. Even when you are on a tough team or a team that's going through it a little bit, you can certainly count on some guys. And what it shows you is you can make a mistake, and you could see him. He was mad for a second, and then he brought it all back together, and you know, makes a couple of stellar plays to help them win a game.
Yes, and that like I said, that. I was in the ballpark that day. We literally went, there was probably 35, 40,000 people. It was a lot of people there that day. And you felt there was no air in that building. And then some of these things started chipping away. Bo hits the home run to get the 3-1, so on and so forth. But it was as loud as it was for some of the playoff games I'd been there for. When Davis Schneider threw that guy out at home plate, it was completely different. So then he comes back and hits that home run, lead off that next inning, Jason. And it was, like I said, it sounded as loud as it's been in that dome with it shut as any other time I've been in there. And it was very incredible to see that jump from the fans. And you could see it lit a fire under the Blue Jays' ass that finally took them to the, you know, point where they just said, fine, let's go. Game on. And Danny Jansen hits that big home run. Ernie Clement ends up being the, I'd say, the go-ahead hero anyways, because he was the one that hit the double there in the price of the eight game. And I just thought it was great that I got to see Ernie Clement, being a Rochester native, hit the, you know, what ended up being the game winning hit where he's from. That was really cool for me to end up in seeing it, because I drove up with a couple of friends and we had a great time. So
that's awesome.
It was really fun to see that win, but I walked out of that with my friends, who, mind you, aren't Blue Jays fans. They just wanted to come up and take a road trip and hang out at the ballpark and goof around with me. I think my buddy James, at least, might have left that game as a Blue Jay fan. So, because he's never seen a baseball. I haven't been to a baseball game that was that wild, where you went from that kind of an extreme to the other with us winning. It just doesn't happen.
And I will say this. I mean, as much as the fans in Toronto for all of their sports get scrutinized, I have lots of friends who are Leaf fans, and most of us don't like them. You know, it's one of those things, and I'm a Canuck fan, and people hate Canuck fans. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things where the Toronto fan, though, is quite loyal. They expect and they want a winner. And when they're smart, savvy fans, and when they see, you know, things going right, like I even noticed the other night in, I can't remember what game it was. I think it was the 3-2 loss to the Twins. The fans in Toronto cheer at the right times. And I can't say that about the Vancouver Canucks fans in the arena. You know, there's not a lot of corporate people. There's not a lot of guys in suits or ladies in pantsuits. Do they wear that anymore? That go to a Jays game, even a new
solar fans guy.
People go home and they get the, you know, they change and they put on something normal and they go. You go to a Canucks game during the season, and I see this in other barns too, is, you know, there's suits there, and no suit is there to cheer, you know, like, and the I think that the one thing,
you want to be an aristocrat, huh?
the one thing that the Blue Jays fandom does really well, and I like a lot, you know, different than the guys and girls that listen to us here, is they care. They really do care. And the kids care, and the parents are smart enough to tell their kids what's happening, so that the kids at the games understand what's happening and they want to participate. It's good to see it. It's tough to see the Jays struggling so mightily right now. But my hope is that the next, you know, like I said, the next 2 weeks or at least series, so 10 days, are crucial. I mean, they have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They have to get involved, and they have to fight their way out of this mire.
It's a, to your point, it's a perfect capitalization point for them to get some confidence back. And I think they were trending in the right direction here with these last few series, knowing they can go toe-to-toe with these teams and really get going. But I do want to talk and focus on the one game that we haven't talked about yet from that Twin series, and that is the Sunday game on Mother's Day that the Blue Jays unfortunately lost 5-1 with the bullpen really imploding and letting the Twins basically Carlos Santana us.
Holy.
I don't know what it is with that gentleman, but stop pitching to him.
Yeah, Jay Killer.
He's the same thing that Ryan Mountcastle does to us as Baltimore Orioles. You know, there's just certain players that play the Blue Jays well. It's like they see the blue, it's like bull, you know. They man up and crush everything. Carlos Santana, for some reason in his career, sees the Blue Jays uniforms and gets all excited. So on that avenue, if you're talking about who really beat us over the weekend, he was a really big part of that. But the flip side of that is Alek Manoah was amazing and looked Alek Manoah. I know it's only like one Alek start. Manoah. Yeah, this looks like the guy we drafted in the first round and who we got to enjoy for basically the better part of 2 years, and then he fell off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to take that with a grain of salt. If he happens to even do half as well as he did on Sunday, Jason, the Blue Jays have a fifth starter that they can actually maybe rely on here. And you and I were very excited to see what Yarod could do for us. And we were trending in the right direction on that conversation, I think, too, before he got hurt. But there's not a bad answer here if he comes back healthy and looks like he did, and Alek Manoah continues to do what Alek Manoah just did that last start, or in some, you know, two-thirds part of that performance. That fixes a lot of things for the Blue Jays. It solidifies that fifth spot in the rotation to let those, you know, our main, you know, workhorses in the rotation 1-4 do their job and not feel like the weight of the world is on them to all pitch as well as they have been doing, and worry about like what Gausman did to start that game on Saturday and he lays up an egg. But then you have somebody that actually had come out of the damn bullpen in those, I'd say, the hurry up and eat it up innings. you have somebody like Yarod, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Or maybe he ends up being a really nice pairing with Eric Swanson, who's struggled. Jimmy Garcia is incredible right now.
To your point, so, you know, Jimmy Garcia has been, he's been outrageous. How nice was it to see Zach Pop finally look like an actual Major League Baseball pitcher for a couple of innings?
And kudos, he's got all the talent in the world too.
Oh yeah. I mean,
so we'll see what happens.
100%.
Yeah. Right now, Keegan Matheson wrote a really, really nice write-up yesterday about Jimmy Garcia. And other than the fact that he's saying he's playing like he's from another planet right now, he has a 0.53 ERA, 21 strikeouts in 17 innings.
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't have Jordan Romano in the back of this bullpen, you have Jimmy Garcia. That is already just as good. So maybe there is some smoke to some of these other things we'll get to here for the latter half of the show, with the rumor mill clearly starting to kick up in Major League Baseball. But to that point, it's a godsend right now having Jimmy Garcia as one of the other, you know, nail drivers at the end of this bullpen.
It's the only bright spot. If you go top to bottom on our middle relievers, Swanson, Meza, Richards, Cabrera, Pearson, and Pop. I mean, you couldn't get... For a while now, you can't get a reliable inning out of any of them. And I don't understand it. I understand when guys are squeezing it and they're missing the zone. I'm okay with that. Keep missing the zone. Just don't correct your error by throwing one right down Main Street, which is what,
exactly.
I mean, especially Swanson. Swanson is he might as well be throwing BP when he starts to struggle. And he's got this sort of, I don't give a crap face going on with that bad mustache. Like, it's as a fan and as somebody who, you know, is following the team, I mean, probably no more than any other, you know, hardcore fan, but he's got to get back to his hotel room or back to his house, watch that replay and be like, I probably should look like I give a shit. Like, I should probably... My give a shit meter should go up just a bit, so people don't see me on the street.
When he was clean cut, Eric Swanson, nobody could hit clean cut Eric Swanson. Right. Shave that thing like Danny Jansen in the middle of the damn game.
Caterpillar off your face, you weirdo.
To that point, he might be in that ballpark. If you got to change something up, something ain't working. And it's amazing. Me being a superstitious old baseball player too, it's amazing what the stupid things are that shake up your day just enough to be able to get something solid out of it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's just what it is at the end of the day, correct? Yep. So, but is there anything you'd like to add on the fact, did you watch Alek Manoah pitch on Sunday?
I did not watch it live. I was fortunate enough to watch the Jays in 30 after. And it was he was electric. It was everything that the 2 years ago Alec Manoah was. It was zip on the fastball with movement. His breaking stuff had great fall off. And I like that the his fastball was working in every way it was being thrown. It was hard. It had movement. It was deceptive. He was going up and down with it. Like he had a couple of strikeouts right across the numbers. And that's a tough, I mean, when you're struggling, that's a pitch you don't want to miss with. And he looked so confident dotting the top of the strike zone just with bullets. And I mean, it's the same with Kikuchi. Kikuchi yesterday, he had a couple over 96, where he's just throwing rocks. And so, it's really nice to see Manoah come out of this a little bit. I mean, you know, we've done this dance already a couple of times with him. I guess the next start, let me look at my trusty dusty. So that would be against Tampa on the 19th. He is scheduled to start. That is going to be a really telltale start for Alec Manoah. If he can throw another good start up, then the veil has been lifted and he's starting to work his way back to being a regular starter. If he flops back and gives up six, then we know he got lucky for a day.
Yeah, and that's my fear right now. But the thing that impressed me enough in that start was the fact that I think you nailed the ballpark pieces that are the actual pitching tangibles, right? What I noticed watching him was the fact that it looked like the swagger was back a little bit. He's looked a little flat, disappointed. Obviously, he's been going through a lot on the mound, up and down in the minors and back to the majors, a million different voices in his ear. I don't know if he finally tuned all that crap out, like he said during his after interview for that meet that day.
Maybe it was the braids.
Biggest piece. Yeah, the biggest parts of that whole thing is like, it reminded me a little bit more of that swagger from when he was in the All-Star game where, he was mic'd up for the one inning he pitched.
Yeah.
The three punchies and he jumped off the mound kind of thing. It felt more like that intensity, not just, I'd say, bravado. There's nothing wrong. Move on. It felt like he knew he belonged there. What I mean? He wasn't just the prima donna that showed up and said, by the way, I'm going to try doing this today. Hope it goes well.
Yeah. He didn't
major league level. You need to know you're there to walk the walk.
Yeah. And I think that he's been wearing his other starts quite a bit. And I think you're 100% right. This is the first time he looked like he'd wiped the slate clean. He was like, I'm just going to let my talent do what it can do. I mean, I know what I can do. I don't have to change all that much. And the thing for me with that performance is he was dotting everything out of the zone. So he wasn't giving them anything to hit. And I hate to go back to Kikuchi again over and over again, but I think that is the comparable is Yusei is hard to hit. He doesn't live in the strike zone. And I watched him run through those Orioles yesterday, like bad chili. Like, I mean, he was just dealing and they were looking at him like, dude, like, don't throw me that slider again. You're making me look like a donkey. Like, good pitchers can make good hitters really bad. And so it's, I like that Manoah had a lot of zip on it. It was moving away, and towards the lefties, which, I mean, if you're a lefty and somebody's got 97 plus and it's breaking in at you, like, come on, what are you going to do with that? Like, might as well just flip the bat around backwards and hope it hits you. Like, but it's nice to see it. And I mean, it's not that Gausman or Bassett or Bassett pitch poorly. They're in the zone. They're living in the strike zone, and you get hurt when you live in the strike zone. Jimmy Garcia is not living in the strike zone. Like you say,
he's throwing the ball in the strike zone. He's just, whatever he's doing, he's got the batters so freaking uncomfortable.
And Cabrera,
left, down, right, everything.
Cabrera looked good last night. And again, he gets that pop up to end the inning and Vladdy drops it. And you could see it on his face. He's like, my son is a contact pitcher. Like he knows he's not going to overpower guys, But he pitched last night, and he made two or three of the better hitters in our league look like complete and total, like they'd never played baseball before. And when a kid from the other team comes up to you and says, you have to stop throwing me that curveball, you know you're doing it right. And it, you know, my son has been notorious for not being in the strike zone. And when he doesn't get those calls, he doesn't pitch as well. But when it's big games, when it's men umpiring, then he knows that he's been nibble and he's going to get it and he's going to make guys fold up. And, you know, it's like watching, you know, like watching Kikuchi yesterday was like watching somebody paint a masterpiece. And then I'm happy to say that Manoah looked similar, you know, like he looked great. His body language was great. His energy was great. You know, like he was in the dugie and laughing and, you know, maybe keep the braids, keep the cornrows. That's my advice for Manoah right now is keep the cornrows, buddy.
That could be one of those stupid things that I was, you know, like I said, I'll go back to one of my favorite baseball movies, Bull Durham, that Susan Sarandon's character tricks Tim Robbins' character, who is the young it player for Major League Baseball, that he's in the minors working his flight toward the, you know, the big leagues. She tricks him into wearing women's underwear to get his mind off of everything while he's on the mound. Yep. It's like, okay, great, fine. She goes, all the guys did that in the Carolina League. It's not a big deal. You know, it's like I said, it's amazing the little things sometimes that will turn it around for anybody and anything. You know, it's not even just a sports thing. Sometimes you just need that little change of pace, getting something out of your head. Think differently. And right now, I think that is a perfect mantra for what anything the Blue Jays try over the next week is think differently. Yeah. Clearly, what you've been doing up to this point is not been working. So Alek Manoah could be the exact poster child of this think differently thing.
Yeah.
Because that was the first thing I noticed when he went out to the mound on that game was I'm like, oh, nice haircut. That works.
He had a little skip in his step. Yeah, he had a little skip in his step when he ran out there, which he didn't have in his last start. And I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe somebody just said to him, hey, Alek, just go out there. And at this point, I mean, I can't get any worse.
Anything's worth a try.
Yeah, you might as well have some flipping fun with it and have at her. So, I mean, it's great to see, you know, fingers crossed for that game in Tampa. I mean, I think that could be a real crux point for the Jays this season even. Because if he can start to put good starts together, then they become a scary bunch again. And, you know, when their starters are scary, they can compete with anybody.
And that's what it is. Like I said, it could be they have the talent. We just saw that. You don't take it to as close a game as you did against those three games against the Minnesota Twins, especially the one where they literally flipped the script and return and win a ball game they had no right in Major League Baseball winning on Saturday. They took them to school right to the end of the game on both Friday and Sunday. Certain things happened in each of those games that obviously led to a Blue Jays loss, but they were right there. Same thing with the Baltimore two games because of the one right out. They win the one game in epic fashion in a extra innings, and then they only lost that second game because, I'm sorry to say, Jordan Romano was gassed, and he left one hanging just high enough for a really good hitter really good lineup to tee up.
Yeah, I agree.
It's that simple.
He was clearly tired.
These were team wins and team losses.
Yeah.
So if they can continue to put that kind of effort forward, what they just did over the last five games, they are going to probably win more games than they lose.
100%.
At least they're going to put it all out there and hope things happen in the right fashion. So is it going to be a cure-all? Probably not. But to that point, if they find some things to, like I said, think different, Jason. That says the guy that watched that gentleman in Buffalo for too many years.
Yes. Yeah.
That they get to keep doing this and keep going. And like I said, there is enough to this team, regardless of the fact that I said those things about the horrible offense. If you flip around and look at the other side of the ball, the Blue Jays starting pitching has them in leading of all other categories on the pitching side as it refers to starting pitching.
Yep.
The bullpen has the talent. We haven't seen our true bullpen for what it could do this year yet. And there might be just enough pieces with the Yayrod situation and some of these other pieces of the puzzle here that could turn around and actually keep things moving in the right direction, even in the bullpen. We don't need to be a lockdown bullpen. You need to continue that consistency that our starting five is putting together right now. And if you could keep these a 2-3 run, 5-run games, the Blue Jays can have a chance to win some ball games. Because now you do have Bo Bichette and Vladdy hitting.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Bo Bichette hitting, immediately we saw a difference. I mean, he hit 400 over the last week. He hit 2 home runs. I mean, he was all over the place. And he looked like Bo Bichette. He was locked in. Feet were balanced. He was hitting the ball solidly. He wasn't trying to get out of the gate before he swung the ball, and he was hitting it all over the place. When Bo Bichette is going, the fear for the other team is how easily he can hit the ball to Oppo. He does it without even trying. He's really, really good at it, and it's really hard to defend because defensively you want to shift, and then he rips one down.
He's taking everything.
Then he rips one down the third baseline, and you're like, well, okay, well, what do we do now? We can't spread out to cover him.
Yeah.
And if you watch, that's where he started getting his hits, is he spreads them out first, and then he increases the gap size and just puts it in the gaps. And, you know, the home run he hit was to up, you know, sort of center, just center towards right, which for him, that's not his power alley. His power alley is over on the other side. But, I mean, if he can keep hitting those spots, I mean – He's an excellent baseball player. Let's not forget about that. Oh, if he starts coming around, then, you know.
The one thing I'm going to say here is, and I hate using this analogy, but this is what I'm going to use. The Yankees, like I said, were having a really rough go on it. Finally, Aaron Judge, former MVP kind of player, is finally showing up for the Yankees, and they're going off. Bo Bichette is that guy for this Blue Jays lineup. He's the catalyst. He's the spark plug. He's your Paul Molitor in your Wham-co. Vladdy's going to do Vladdy things, but Bo Bichette getting on base and doing Bo Bichette things for this lineup has been the igniter over the years. So
yeah, it's so important.
Get him right, keep it moving. And I think that's right now that's starting to form.
Yeah, it's so important to have Bo going. The nice thing for Bo Bichette is he's actually proved that he's more than willing to go into any part of the lineup as well and hit. I mean, I think he likes, obviously he's a baseball player. He likes hitting at the top. That's always where the best guys are, but I mean, it's for him once he's going and, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe that was the catalyst. Maybe that was the thing. And if you guys ever want to see, so Aaron Judge, one of the turnarounds that he had in his swing 2 years ago, there's a video with him with Harold, Harold Reynolds.
Reynolds.
And he's talking about where he models his swing. And lo and behold, who do you think the first person he discusses as modeling his swing after? It's Bo Bichette. And he literally says it. He said, I had to change my swing, and I looked at a guy like Bo Bichette, who's smaller than me and can hit the ball farther than me. And how was he doing that? And so mechanically, when you watch Aaron Judge, his swing is very similar to Bo Bichette's. It is. It really is. He's just, you know, 6'9", and Bo's not. So, I mean,
monstrous.
It's... Yeah. And so I think that speaks a lot to the respect that Bo has in the league as a player. And, you know, I've heard some rumors, you know, like I know that we may touch on it. We've only got a little bit here, but we may touch on the fact there's been some rumors, you know, going around about trade talks and all the rest of it. And one of them, obviously, that what's been brought up is that there was talk about trading Bo last year. And now, because he's hot or getting hot, this would be the perfect time to unload him. And as a fan of the Jays.
You're going where I was going. So if you want to just segue point there at one, you're good to go on that, ding. My friend.
All right. as a fan, as a person who loves the sport of baseball, Jays management, do not trade this guy. And if you do, you better get a king's ransom. And when I say a king's ransom, it better look ridiculous. Like, it better be like, whoa, did we just fleece the Cardinals or the Pirates or the Reds or whoever the hell it is? But it better be ridiculous. Because if you give this kid away,
Yeah.
It's if you it'll end up be doing the end.
This is the equivalent of what the basically what should have been the Mookie Betts trade for the Dodgers. This 100%. Is if the Orioles are knocking on the door, you're getting Jackson Holliday. You are not getting a pile of should be
no
because Boba Shett's still going to be a guaranteed Blue Jay for three more years.
Yeah, All-Star. So, he's going to, if I had to make a $10,000 bet right now whether Boba Shett ends up in Cooperstown, I'm saying yes. I'm saying this point right now, he's arguably the best shortstop in the game. And you know, like where does he go? He's an excellent baseball player, and you cannot mortgage a guy like him to make, and you can't be making mistakes. I mean, if you can get some studs, back,
he's only got this year and next year.
Yeah.
He's a free agent in 2026.
Yeah. But I mean,
well, either way, that's still insanely controllable for a team that would want to win now. And the team that's been, like you mentioned, Jason, the Dodgers are the ones that are talking this.
Yeah.
You talk about a team that wants to win now with a lineup that's already obscene and getting a good shortstop like Boba Shett to, you know, move Mookie back to a normal position. But he's doing, mind you, Mookie Betts is playing MVP level shortstop right now.
Let's not
and
it's even insane
how well he's
like
fish out of water you thought he would be.
What do you think the Boston Red Sox? What do you think the fans of the Boston Red Sox think about the Mookie Betts deal at this point?
I can give you about two fingers that are not in the very fashionable way of saying it.
Yeah, it's I believe Stone Cold. But Steve I don't think
they're pointing them at Mookie.
No, not at all.
I an office that dropped that ball so hard. It's not even funny.
And it's
you traded your franchise.
Yes, you mortgaged your franchise for nothing. And the thing with me is that teams always talk about
Hernandez,
you know,
is back on the Dodgers.
Yeah. teams talk about win now mentality. Do you know how long the Dodgers have had a win now mentality? The last 10 years. Do you know how long the Braves have had a win now mentality? The last 10 years. I mean, those two teams effectively, when they get to a spot like the Jays are at right now, gloves are off. They make sure that the guys they want protected are protected, and everyone else is fighting for a job. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Vogelbach or Kiermaier or you know, or any of those other guys. You are fighting for a job. You're fighting for your life in the MLB because they're going to trade you. They'll get rid of you or they'll drop you down, and they're not afraid to do it. They can't have Acuña not having a guy above him and below him who can advance him around, or at least let him get.
Let me put the Braves manager position on, and I'm not going to name names because everybody already knows who the general manager of the Atlanta Braves is and how we don't have him anymore. but on that note, the Braves last offseason noticed a embarrassment of riches that they had for their outfield, and they were actually going to be able to capitalize on Marcell Ozuna continuing to be a designated hitter. So they didn't need all these outfielders. So they turn around and move Vaughn Grisham for a part that they did need in Chris Sale, who has been having good enough. It's got to be a fifth starter for the Braves. It's not a big deal for Chris Sale to hopefully stay healthy enough to, you know, be a fifth starter.
Yeah.
But Vaughn Grisham has done nothing for the Boston Red Sox yet.
And what could, I mean, if you're looking at it, like if
you end Jays up looking were, like that.
Yeah, Jays were in the same boat. We had 11 second basemen. And the only move we made was getting rid of Espinal. I mean, I feel like, you know, Biggio had some trade value at that point. I feel like maybe even, you know, and I hate to say it, but David Schneider had a lot of trade value at that point. I mean, you probably could have gotten an everyday guy and a prospect for him at that point. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to realize that if you only nine guys can play, that's the way the game is. It hasn't changed for a long time. And if you have 14 guys playing one position, you're going to run it and you can't platoon it. Like David Schneider's done a great job playing in the outfield. I'm fine with that. You know,
perfect.
The fact
you,
that they
but at the end of the day, you weren't expecting that to happen when spring training started.
And the fact that you have to bring up Barger and have him not play his actual position is dumb. I mean, he's an excellent third baseman with a cannon for an arm. Let him play there. Like, I mean, we don't have a set third baseman right now. Yeah, put him at short. Yeah. I mean, he's athletic, he's strong. You know, like see the tea leaves, for God's sake.
To that point, these are marketable pieces that you're talking about for these trade rumor season things that are going up. And then the one that came up actually in recent Blue Jays broadcasting was the fact that Buck Martinez brought up the fact that the Orioles were already asking for Jordan Romano, for example. That is the one thing right now that the Baltimore Orioles have a weakness in is their end of their bullpen. They have enough arms to throw out there and eat up innings, but they have nobody that has that locked down mentality. And that's because you don't have the Craig Kimbrel from 4 or 5 years ago. You have to, I'm sorry to say, the I'm approaching the end of my career Craig Kimbrel, who is still, by the way, probably a very good, serviceable bullpen arm. But he's more, exactly. you've got him more in the, as much as I love Jay Jackson, Jay Jackson is obviously a regular everyday reliever at this point in his Major League Baseball career. He's not the starter he once was. And, Craig Kimbrel's going to be a Hall of Famer, but there's a reason that, people eventually retire, and he's closer to that than he is to obviously being the Uber level closer that he once was.
Right.
So
right.
The Baltimore Orioles are shopping actively for a major league closer.
Yeah.
Jordan Romano's got enough control that the Blue Jays trade him and get anything back. I would say that if you're talking about doing any level of soft rebuild here, that he's probably still a Toronto Blue Jay at the end of the day, because you're hoping that he's going to be your closer.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, I think that the Jays have enough where you could probably continue to have like Yimi Garcia could be our closer. He's proven in the past that he can do it. If we need, if Romano is demanding enough, then I think you got to pull the trigger on that, because Jordan's been hurt a lot. He's been inconsistent after those injuries. And I mean, if you can get value for him, he's a good Canadian kid. I'd hate to see him go, but it's one of those things where at this point you have to start taking advantage of what we do have to give to teams that need it, that are locked into the playoffs. Like there's teams already that
are going to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Because they've got the value to.
Jordan Romano's 31 years old, and he's currently worth $7.75 million for a season. And he's not a free agent until 2026. So after the 2025 season. So it's that same window we were just talking about with Bo Bichette. Yep. But to that point, like I said, what are you hoping to achieve in that time frame? Are you hoping to get a reset here and get the Blue Jays back in business in a year so you can still capitalize on Vladdy and Bo if they're still here?
I think so.
It's all these kind of questions that they got to start answering if they want to start moving some of these pieces around. And I agree with you, Jason. If you had to, I'm sure there's something that we could do. And to your point, right now, maybe you're getting enough with just Jimmy Garcia trading and keeping Romano.
Yeah. I mean, the only other one I would consider, kind of things, and
he's a free agent at the end of the year.
I think it's blasphemous that I even say this, is I feel like one of the most valued pieces we have, if it's going to go tire fire, is Kikuchi. I think that there would be a lot of suitors. I think you could probably demand a very high price for him. And I mean, can you imagine him on the Dodgers or the Braves or any of those teams that are challenging? I mean, if you've got a deadly offense with that guy just dealing, I'm not saying trade him. I'm not saying that's the right move. But what I'm saying is right now, he's a very valuable piece. And
I agree with that, but I'm still not in the tear it down mode yet. I there's still enough that I have to see here for the next, I'd say, month before I'm really lighting the whole thing on fire and figuring out how to start over for next season already. 100%. I want to mention one thing that came in through the X channel from Patrick Flannery is, that I think he's saying that don't touch Jordan Romano. But at that end of the day, I think that would be the general accepted vernacular for most Blue Jays fans on the train, Jordan Romano. And like I said, I think it would be one of those things, Jason, that it had to be a move heaven and earth kind of like thing to be able to make it happen. And right now, I don't remember the exact time frame, but I think it was they did on one of the most recent Blue Jays broadcast, they showed since Romano's debut, he's been that whatever that date was in time a few years ago, he's been one of the top five closers in Major League Baseball. So yeah, there, like you said, there's trade value there, but I also, if I'm hoping to win on any level, I need Jordan Romano.
Right, right. So it's going to come down to fire sale or build it up. And build it up, we got options. Build it up, we've got Buffalo. Build it up, we can build internally. Tear it down, it's going to get ugly. And
it's going to get very ugly. Especially for all Blue Jays fans.
I don't know if Jays fans can take it. The 36,000 that were there may quickly turn to about 6,000 if they start axing this thing. But
I'll cancel my three other road trips. I can tell you. Can't take that. But to that point, like I said, I think there's still enough in the tank here that they got to find out what they can do between now and I'd say the end of June and really push, because that if they can't figure something out between now and then, you come the trade deadline and you're thinking very differently. Are these rumors that we've all been hearing become more reality at that point? Yes, and that would be the time to strike, because if you are talking about this team doesn't get that far and June ends and we still look like a team that doesn't know how to even get close to 500, it really would not shock me. And on MajorLeagueBaseball.com the other day, or no, sorry, actually watched an MLB network, and MLB Tonight was talking about most likely to be traded stars. Vlad Jr. was on that list. And I think that goes back to what you were saying before the season. If we don't get anywhere, that he becomes your unfortunate one that we're all going to see walk away. And that will be the day that Vlad Jr. turns back into MVP, and we're all going to have to eat it.
I don't know. I mean, Vladdy's an interesting cat. I mean, I don't know if he explodes, if he goes somewhere else. He's kind of in cruise control, and I don't know that he's going to ever change that. I mean, he is what he is.
I think there are some more interesting names that were on that list too. That if the Rays are still going to stay like the Rays have been with us in that same ballpark, do they trade Randy Arozarena, who's got three more years? 100%
they do.
And I think 100%. That happens. That's a very Rays move.
That's 100%.
There's names like that on that list, Jason, and it's going to get interesting. So, anyway, before we beat a dead trade horse. is there anything else you'd like to talk out before I finally found some funny? Because I need to lighten my mood back.
Yeah, there's one thing I did want to message, and you guys know that I kind of use this as my own personal soapbox sometimes, so I'm going to do it. So last weekend, 50 of the best 13-year-old baseball players in the province of BC were invited to a camp in Surrey, British Columbia, and that group of 52 was going to be brought down to 13. My son Carter made that group of 52, which is an awesome kudos to him. And I hope that he's super proud of himself, because we're all really proud of the fact that he did so well. On the Saturday, he went 7 for 7. And it was pretty rad, you know, to have him. He just didn't make it. But one of the kids on our team, Michael Puddicombe, did make it as an alternate. So to be deemed one of the best 15 kids at your age group in the whole province is pretty cool. So congratulations to Michael. It's North Shore baseball kicking butt.
Good deal. Congratulations as well. That's awesome to hear. I'm glad things are going well. So back to the fun. We're going to talk picks to click first. Last week, we had an interesting spread here. I picked Davis Schneider. You had George Springer, who ended up playing in a whole three games, but I think he got 8 at bats. Ken had Justin Turner, and because this is how fast things can change in baseball, everybody. Our guest spot, who is going to, we're going to finally have a guest next week. I will finally get to that in a minute. Bo Bichette was the guest spot last week. And out of those four gentlemen, it is clear cut that Bo Bichette had the best week in Toronto Blue Jays baseball. So the guest spot is kicking the living crap out of all of us right now.
Crushing us
with 3 wins on the spot. And I do want to mention really quick that before I get your pick, that Blue Jays fans, that I'm sorry to say, for the time being, Mr. Ken Alfred is going to be taking a hiatus from the Jay Bird Watching podcast. We want to thank Ken for all the wonderful service that he is, and we hope that his schedule lightens back up so he can have some more fun with us on evenings with us here at the Jaybird Watching Podcast. But Ken does many podcasts and his schedule's getting a little bit full is kind of what's going on. And he wants to make sure he still has time to hang out and coach baseball with his lovely family and kids.
Yep. We're taking applications. Taking applications.
Yes. So on that note, we're going to change the Ken spot to the guests two spot for the time being. So I'll look up the worst person here in Blue Jays baseball, which funny enough was last week was 0-for-11 Justin Turner. Oof. So JT moves over to the guest spot. We're going to skip the Ken spot. So is your pick, my friend?
Oh man. Oh, well, you know, just a bevy of riches to take from. You know what? I'm going to stick with the hot-ish hand and I'm going to take Danny Jansen.
It's a good pick. Danny, that home run he hit at that game on Saturday, I looked down for like 0.2 seconds when I didn't realize the pitch was in. I heard the click of the bat, and I'm like, it's gone. And my friend's like, what the fuck's gone?
What do you mean? Where are we going?
And I knew Danny Jansen was at the plate. I heard the click. Just looked at the left field wall and I saw this thing screech into the stands and basically just run out of stadium and run into a wall. And the launch angle on that home run when I saw it, Jason, was 22 degrees.
Yeah, I know.
It was nothing.
It was called that a fern
at 110 miles an hour. Yeah, exactly. So Danny Jansen has been on fire at the bat since coming back. And to that point, I'm going to continue. I have not done my Vlad pick yet. So I'm going to hope that Vlad continues to hit the ball hard. I think some of these balls that he's been hitting hard over the last week are actually going to start turning into actual hard hit line drives.
He's slightly barreling it in the
right spot.
Yeah.
Correct.
He's barreling.
He's barreling it. Spiking it. So that's my hope for this coming week in Blue Jays baseball. And I did find us some fun because, like I said, I needed something to just warm my cockles of my heart and make me feel a little bit better about everything that's been going on in baseball, everything around inside. I have the Munenori Kawasaki feel good vibes real here on MajorLeagueBaseball.com, because how can you miss having a guy like this on our team that's just that unifying person, right? I don't know if we have that person that's just the full-on goofball that brings the team together. And just remember, Jason, monkeys don't cramp.
Nope, never ever. Never ever.
So, and to that point, having a good baseball player, you know, everybody remembers that Munenori Kawasaki was, you know, this clown and wonderful goofball that you have in the dugout and have him screaming at the top of his lungs with the best interview in baseball, Mark DeRosa. But he was a really good player for us, a really good role player that was very similar into what we're seeing as far as a role player on quality with what we're seeing from IKF at this moment, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just really, I think we're missing that. There's that catalyst piece like we were talking about. You're missing those silly little things.
Maybe just seeing him will spark it. Maybe just seeing a little cooch will spark it. Little cacooch in the gooch.
Yeah, I just miss having somebody dancing in the dugout every once in a while. And, you know, like we were even just talking the silly things with a home run jacket. There's got to be something. And I don't know what the weird, like, sword move
is. I don't know what it is either. I don't like it.
It's not enough.
No.
It needs to be something.
Yeah.
Build. Go for it. Does it turn into everybody on the bench turning into a lightsaber fight or something when you
smash
the sword?
No.
But got to miss that part. But to that point, Jason, anything else?
No, that's it, buddy. Got to roll. Got kids to get to umpiring and dinner to eat.
Yep. Good deal. Blue Jays fans, thank you very much. We saw plenty of you in on Twitter and Instagram and everything this evening. Again, please make sure you hit us up with your comments. We want to see it. You can be like Mr. Patrick Flannery tonight that got his name posted up on the show with a wonderful Mike Wilner / Jordan Romano comment. Join the conversation. That's the whole point here. And if I'm going to be heading up to Toronto, I'll make sure I do a better job of advertising. And I'm going to be wandering around the pubs and the ballpark to make sure you can come and join and talk to us. Maybe I'll record some tidbits for you on the show. But to that point, I'm going to be on the walk-off podcast this Sunday for the lawn toss episode. So you can catch us there, or at least me anyway, Jason. But in the flip and the reverse of that, we are going to get Scott Belford of the walk-off podcast next Thursday on our show. It's been a long time since he's been on the show. We are going to wrap that back up because he's having a promo for his comedy tour, along with they're hosting an actual event at a comedy club again in Toronto, which I happened to attend last year and had a wonderful time. I'm hoping that I can get back up there again and have a wonderful time with everybody too. That was actually where I had the pleasure of meeting Davis Schneider and Jay Jackson at that event. So that'll be Baseball Town at the comedy club in Toronto. So, but we'll make sure we give you those details next week when Scott is on the show. So until then, make sure you get your listening of the Jaybird Watching podcast wherever you happen to get your podcasting pleasures from, whether it's Spotify or any of those wonderful places. We are there and ready to chat with you as well. And we are the official Blue Jays podcast of jaysjournal.com, part of the Fan Site Network. And that's it. Bert and Jason, I got nothing. So
that's it.
One, two, three. Woo! Let's go, Blue Jays. Let's go, Canucks.
Go, Canucks, go!
Thank you for listening to the Jaybird Watching Podcast. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, at BirdWatchingGC, and our YouTube channel. If you want to support the show and get extra content, please consider joining it to our Patreon at patreon.com/BirdWatchingGC. Go, Jays, go.
Woo!
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.